Hi, I'm Ted Zoller, and you're tuned into On the Heels of Innovation, a podcast powered by the Entrepreneurs Genome Project at University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. How is it that some people are successful in pushing their ideas further and faster than the rest of the world? What characteristics do they share? Which skills did they work to hone? And what lessons have they uncovered through each step forward and back that can inspire you to accelerate your own ideas for a business or venture? This podcast will explore the perspectives, insights, and journeys of innovators and entrepreneurs who combine creative thinking and perseverance to go beyond the expected. On the Heels of Innovation is powered by the Entrepreneurs Genome Project, which is a research initiative that I lead with my students in the Entrepreneurs Lab class at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, revealing the DNA that makes up successful entrepreneurs.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the podcast On the Heels of Innovation, NextGen, and I'm your host, Akib Khan. On NextGen, I sit down with Carolina students and recent grads who are blazing their own path in entrepreneurship. For two sisters who grew up in rural North Carolina, building a startup that fuses South Asian fashion with the perspectives of first-gen South Asian Americans has been an entrepreneurial education on a global stage. Nikki and Ritika Shamdasani launched Sani to increase the visibility of Indian culture and attire by designing the types of outfits they would always wanted but couldn't find. Get their take on confronting feelings of imposter syndrome as fashion industry novices, where to navigate the intricacies of fabrics, costs, quantities, and supply chains that stretch more than 7,500 miles between Delhi, India, and their North Carolina headquarters. Both sisters discuss why mentors matter and ways to tap into second and third level professional networks. Get their advice on how entrepreneurs can practice patience when grinding through extended business cycles that don't include immediate returns but set the stage for long-term growth.
Hi, I'm Nikki Shamdasani. I graduated from UNC in 2015, studied political science and business, and tried to combine those things by doing federal consulting after I graduated. Realized I did not like federal consulting about 6 months in, and left that job to go work as the chief of staff at a startup accelerator called Matter, where we were teaching design thinking to early stage media companies. So did that in San Francisco first, and then moved to New York to start the office there. And one thing led to another after a couple of years, and Sani started after that, left New York, came to North Carolina, and here I am.
My name is Ritika Shamdasani. I am a current sophomore at North Carolina State and also the co-founder of Sani.
Sani outfits are made in India and sold to customers throughout North America. What is the day-to-day like running a global venture, collaborating and communicating across continents?
Sure. So day-to-day, everything is different depending on the day, depending on whether we are queuing up a new collection or about to receive one or kind of in the in-between phase. But I'd say we're always doing a little bit of everything. Whether that's designing or social media or operations. And it's hard running a global venture. We have to get up really early and stay up really late. We have to put in the work of figuring out how to best communicate across continents, and have had to, we've improved that over time, and we still don't do it perfectly. There are a lot of things that are lost in translation, not just because of language, but because you are not together. And nowadays we're running the supply chain totally remote. We used to go to India once or twice a year. We obviously haven't done that this year and might not for the near future. And so for us, it's all about, okay, how can we set up the best foundations to get things done correctly? How can we adapt to what our partners need? And, you know, make sure that we are doing the best we can to set Sani up for success in the future.
Nikki, I read a blog post you wrote about your journey diving into a venture. I'm going to read this out loud. Quote, "What resonated with me most was the idea of creating communities and experiences for yourself that can lead to advantageous learning and relationships. I decided to take my own intentionally serendipitous journey." Unquote. So this statement is so powerful to me. You're not talking about just the venture, but rather the journey as a whole, connecting and embracing the communities and experiences that comes with it. And entrepreneurship is all about the journey. Oftentimes, people don't embrace the journey, rather focus too much on the destination of a successful million-dollar exit. And that is the perfect recipe for burnouts and absolute exhaustion. So can you talk about the journey of how you are creating those communities and relationships by diving into the fashion industry, which you both don't have any background in when you started?
Yes, we do not have a background at all in the fashion industry. So we've had to try and be really intentional from the beginning of making sure that we surround ourselves with people that can help us fill in the gaps. And I don't think we did a good enough job of that in the beginning. We were really heads down, which again, there is a time and place for being heads down, but there are a lot of learnings, which I think we could have come to sooner had we gone to a mentor that had been in the fashion industry or textiles and could have told us something like, you really need to invest in your fit, which we did not do for a long time. And so it's really been about continuous improvement. And I believe so strongly in how small decisions can compound. And to me, that goes back to the quote you just said, right? Putting yourselves in these situations, creating that community, being around these people. Every small decision like that, deciding to reach out to someone or taking a meeting, whatever it is, you never know how that can compound. So for us, it's just been about, okay, we learned in this aspect that we really should have leaned on other people more and heard their experiences about fulfilling our first really big order, right? And we should have done that. We didn't, but now we're going to do it for the next round. And we're going to be really intentional about writing down our learnings this time around so that we'll be better next time. So we're not going to have it all figured out. Nobody is from the beginning, but I think really what that quote speaks to and what's been important for us is just continuous improvement through learning from others and learning from the mistakes we make.
Can you share a story around the serendipitous plunge and meeting people that you never would have otherwise?
Yeah, I think the very beginning of the business was actually the first example of that. So like you've mentioned, we had no experience in the fashion industry. Rithika and I had spent a summer together in New York coming up with what would be the first collection, but we didn't know how to actually make it. So we started telling everyone we knew what we wanted to do, from our grandmother's friends to obviously our friends to random strangers that we would meet while we were out and about. And eventually that led to us having some options. We still had to go to India and figure it out and get samples made. But, you know, our grandmother's best friend's son ended up having a factory where he had a little bit of excess capacity. He helped us out. And there were a bunch of other stories like that where, you know, a third degree connection ended up being really helpful. So that's one example. There are so many more. You got to tell everyone you know what you're doing and everyone you don't know.
Fantastic. I love that story. You touched on a great point on the power of second and third networks. Our first networks tends to be our loved ones and our best friends that we have brunch with and are always connected to. And our first networks are the ones we think of for resources and such. Oftentimes, if we think they don't know much about certain topics we need help with, we just don't ask at all. But the thing is, they might know a friend's friends who does have experience and knowledge in that industry and can make the introduction for us. So we need to realize our network is bigger and more powerful than we think. And even when in doubt, we need to always reach out to our networks for those second and third network connections. So when you two were in New York designing these outfits, and I'm guessing it, sketching it out on a piece of paper and seeing where things go, was there ever a time of imposter syndrome?
Oh, all the time, I think. And I think it started from the second we started the portfolio because it did include drawings, like you said, but it started on a PowerPoint. because we had no idea where to start. We had no idea what the term tech pack meant, spec pack meant. And little did we know those were very important terms. And so like going up into it, I think we started from square one, which was just a whole like new learning lesson, right? But I think it also helped us out because in our eyes, the options were endless. We didn't know what couldn't be done, what could be done. So we were really just designing the outfits we wished we had. And I think that gave us a really unique perspective. But even when Nikki, I know, was the one who actually went to India for the first collection to get it manufactured. But even when I think she went to India, Nikki, you can speak on this more, like it was a whole new world. And it was a world none of us had ever explored. We didn't know what fabric stores to go to in Delhi to get fabrics. We didn't know if we were getting gypped off by the prices of the fabric. We didn't know how much it should cost to make something like this. We didn't know the quantity most factories needed to make something like this. So it was just constantly a learning lesson after a learning lesson. And the imposter syndrome was definitely real.
Right. And it's so important for us to talk about imposter syndrome because it's so prevalent in society and has detrimental effects on our mental health. A research paper in Journal of Behavior Science estimated that 70% of US population has experienced imposter syndrome at some point of their life. It's even more prevalent in the entrepreneurship community as entrepreneurs tend to wear so many different hats and have to juggle so many roles. The last thing we need is very capable entrepreneurs limit themselves and not go the distance because they were held back by imposter syndrome. So it's very important to recognize and address imposter syndrome by opening up with our mentors and people we trust. Entrepreneurship is a journey of self-awareness. You're both first-generation Indian American and grew up in Fayetteville, North Carolina, which is pretty rural. There's a lot of bias and discrimination that comes with being a brown person in the rural South. I grew up in Rockingham, North Carolina, which was about 40 minutes south of Fayetteville. And I can tell you, at my school, you were either black, white, or everything else. And I was the only brown person in my class, and I had to face every discrimination you can think of. I was the Mexican wetback, the Muslim terrorist, and all the discrimination that comes with it. So I would love to learn about y'all's experience growing up in areas like that as a brown woman and now running a global venture helping empower all these other people with your clothes and designs. What have you learned about yourself in this journey?
For me, based on where we grew up and the context, I feel like it's always been a pendulum swinging back and forth between, you know, being my Indian self and being my American self. And that included at school, pretending like I liked all of the music groups that other people did, but at home I loved listening to Bollywood, and what I really liked was Bollywood, and just having these like different lives between home and school. College to me at UNC was the first time where I saw South Asian Americans being loud and proud and being on the dance teams and all of these things, and that was the first time I saw it's not either or in one moment, there's a way to combine both. And so with Sani, that's really what we're trying to do. But I'd say for when I was growing up, it was always either or.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with everything that Nikki said. I think, especially like in Fayetteville though, it was almost let's be the American self and ignore the Indian self. And I think that was just about the whole mentality of you wanted to fit in, right? You wanted to not seem like the oddball out. Like you didn't want to be the one who, I know I argue with my mom about this all the time, who brought paranta to school for lunch because you wanted the peanut butter and jelly sandwich so you didn't get called names or it didn't smell weird. And so I think going back, I wish I could tell my younger self to take the paranta because it's so much better than the peanut butter and jelly. But I know that was like an experience I had to go through to really realize it until later, that now through Sani, like Nikki said, I feel more confident embracing that other side of myself. And I feel like now almost people are like, wow, that's so cool, you're Indian. And it's funny because I was like, weren't you the same person who would tease me in elementary school and say that like it was weird that I brought this to school? So I think it's just a matter of like growing into it. And I think Sani's really helped us grow into it. And I think now that we've like gotten out of this phase, we can like Nikki said, really figure out like how to merge them together in the right way. And that's what we're trying to do.
And what have you learned in terms of your strengths and weaknesses and being more self-aware?
One huge thing for me has been about patience, having more patience. In school, and I'd even say for a few years after graduating, it felt like there were these milestones that I could continuously hit every 3 to 6 months. And I'd never experienced this thing where you're maybe grinding for a year or 2 years before you see the effects of something. And so I am not naturally what I would call a patient person, but that has been a huge thing for me to learn to think about it in my mind as, this is what's critical to running a business. You need to have that resilience and that patience, and you need to not think of every time something gets delayed as, oh, this is happening to you, like you're a victim of this situation. You got to think of it as, this is business, and what are you going to do about it? So I think that's been a huge one for me.
Yeah. If we're talking about self-awareness, I think I've learned my breaking point more because of Sani. And I think that's because, so all throughout my, like since Sani started, I've been a student, whether that was, I was a student in high school or now I'm a student in college. And I think there's been plenty of times when there's been things that I've piled up from my school side and Sani side. And when they've come together, it's been overwhelming to where I hit my breaking point. And I think what's really helped with that is A, having a good co-founder who will help you through not getting to your breaking point, but also being more self-aware. And I think through Sani, I've become more self-aware and I know how to prioritize better. I know how to make sure I don't get to my breaking point. And I know the things I need to do to just make sure I have a balance and I'm not investing too much time in either or.
How do you practice self-care during those breaking points?
Oh, that's a good one. So exercise is huge for me. Nikki can tell you if I'm not exercising, I will be cranky and you don't want to work with me. That's a big one for me. And then I think it's also just about, I hate to say it like this, but also just giving yourself some indulgences, right? Like, so if throughout the day, getting the Starbucks is going to help me work, like I'm going to go get the Starbucks and that's okay. So I think it's kind of having a mentality like that. And then also making sure like externally, like physically, you're doing the right things for yourself.
I want to talk about the idea of pivot. How hard is it to actually be the one to pivot when everything is set in stone, where you have Q1 and Q2 goals, and when all of a sudden a pandemic hits and it's totally out of your control? How do you embrace that pivot? Sometimes people just say pivot, 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 but they don't really understand the mental toll it takes to pivot so fast and constantly in such short time period. Like March and April are big wedding seasons and busy time for special occasion wears. Having that season completely decimated and the profit that comes with it, would love to hear how you embrace that.
Yeah, you make such an important point. It takes a huge mental toll. And when you're doing it continuously, because in March and April, people were saying by August, September, we should be fine. So we had a bunch of pop-ups that had been scheduled for the summer that we just shifted to the fall. And we had a big fashion show in April that we were thinking we'd just shift to the fall. And then when it became clear that wasn't the thing to do, it required another pivot. When it became clear that occasion wear, formal wear, might not pick up as a market again until 2022, which it, again, it's continuously changing, then that required another pivot. And I can't tell you exactly how to handle the mental toll because I don't do a great job of it. But the best thing for me has been try and look at it day by day. Again, do what you can that day. I like to know what is our vision for the next, like, I'm not even saying 5 years, for the next 6 months. What is our vision? How does this fit into this like great roadmap that we have? And at every turn, that roadmap has been changed. So for me, it's like, what can I do today? And how can I trust that in retrospect, the story is going to come together and it's all going to come together? That's the best I've been able to do.
The first time I saw Sunny was when y'all had the first Sunny fashion show in downtown Raleigh area. It was so beautifully inspiring to see these incredibly designed clothes and local people, local Indian American people I know that I'm friends with fashioning it. Sometimes with Indian clothes and jewelry, oftentimes it's Caucasian models fashioning it, wearing it. When you look at magazine covers and TV ads, it's oftentimes white people who are wearing it. And I'm like, wait a minute, that doesn't look right. Even in Bollywood movies, the backup dancers tends to be Eastern Europeans. And that goes back to the notion of South Asian culture's obsession with lighter skin tones and skin whitening. It was really empowering and inspiring for me to see how invested y'all were in the local scene and making sure the clothes represented the people who actually wear it. So what does this venture mean to you? What does Sunny mean to you?
For me, and thank you for those kind words, for me, it is about increasing the visibility of South Asian fashion through the lens of South Asian Americans. When I walk into stores like Anthropology and others and see something that is very clearly using a South Asian fabric or silhouette, but it's been completely removed from that context, right? It's just an Anthropology piece. That really frustrates me. And our culture has influenced fashion and culture overall in so many huge ways, but not only do non-South Asians not know about it, but from what we've seen and what I've experienced, even us first and second generation South Asian Americans don't know about it and see it. So to me, Sunny is all about increasing the visibility of our culture and fashion.
Yeah, and I love that. Is the lehengas and everything y'all create is also in that hybrid, adapting from both the Indian and Western ideals that we grew up in. Sort of like us as first and second generation, where we have this constant balance. Like you said, with the social codes, where outside the homes, we may want to eat PB&J and listen to trendy teen pop music. While at home, we love eating parathas and listen to Bollywood music. So it's that balance, and how do we approach it? So that's fantastic to hear. What keeps you going when the odds are stacked?
Our support system.
Yeah.
Family and mentors. I mean, I have had many days over the past 6 months, 8 months, whatever it is, when I have broken down and just had to go to, again, family members or advisors and do what you were talking about earlier, right? Which is just be vulnerable and say, I don't know what to do. And sometimes I've needed them to just listen as I vent, and that helps me move forward. Or I need someone to say, yeah, do this today. Sometimes that's what I need also, a little bit of direction. But it's really the people, I would say, in our community that helps me move forward, as cheesy as that is.
Yeah, and the only thing I would add to that is I think it's the people in our community, but then it's also like when you post a picture on Instagram and a person you may not know that well comments on it saying like, wow, I love this piece. Or when someone emails you saying a friend was talking about Sunny and talking about how much they loved it. And those are all such small things, right? But it truly does like make our day, and it makes us think, okay, there's people out here that really like what we're doing. And I think that's also what keeps us going. The people who we don't really know that well, who are encouraging.
Yeah, we take screenshots of all of that and put it into an inspiration folder for the tough days. So those really do make a difference.
Amazing. So what is your favorite moment in the 3+ years of running Sunny?
One favorite moment? That's hard.
I know. When Nikki and I went up to New York for the Rent the Runway. We did some videos with them in their studio. Like that was, I think, like a once in a lifetime opportunity. But I think the funniest part of that was on the way to the videos, we're in the Uber, right? We're so excited thinking about how this is going to be like amazing. And Nikki's skirt rips, like just rips. And we just didn't know what to do. Like we couldn't turn back. But I think we didn't care because we were like, who cares? We're going to Rent the Runway. We're filming these cool videos. It's going to be amazing. Like, let's just go with it. And we just went with it. No one noticed that her skirt was ripped. And I know that's such a small moment, but I think when you look at the grand scheme of what was happening, it was such like a, what's the word for it, Nikki? What's the word for it? I can't even think of a good word to describe. It was such a happy moment. I guess that's all I have.
I also loved that trip. That was one of my favorite moments for sure. But my favorite moment maybe is what came a few weeks after that, which is when we launched on the platform. And there have been, that was the kind of moment that I was talking about earlier when I had said, in a business, sometimes you're working towards something for a year or 2 years and there aren't clear milestones necessarily, like wins that you're celebrating along the way. You just wait and then in year two, something happens. That was a huge example of that. And for me, seeing how people reacted with the outfits getting completely booked out in 2 days, with the new orders, the new partnerships, everything that was coming in, It's not just about like that being a destination and I loved all the success. It was about, that gave me a lot of fuel for, okay, you know, we're gonna keep doing this. And even if the time horizons are 2 years or longer than that, this is what it's about. And there is so much demand here and we're ready. We're ready for more of this journey. So I loved that moment.
A big round of applause to Nikki and Ritika Shamdasani of Sunny for the fantastic interview.